This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. When Dean Smith was hired as head coach of UNC men's basketball team in 1961, he started an era of Tar Heel dominance in North Carolina. But things started changing in 1980. At the end of that season, Duke announced the hiring of a guy named Mike Krzyzewski, and then 9 days later, NC State brought in this fellow called Jim Valvano. And as we know, those decisions would enrich North Carolina's status as a college basketball heaven and anoint Smith, Krzyzewski, and Valvano as sports legends. But it was the relationships that these men created with one another that perhaps tell an even more remarkable story. It's the subject of sports writer John Feinstein's new book, Legends Club, Dean Smith, Mike Krzyzewski, Jim Valvano, and an epic college basketball rivalry. John's going to be at Flyleaf Books in Chapel Hill tonight, the Regulator Bookshop in Durham tomorrow. But first, he's with me on the State of Things. John Feinstein, well, good to have you here.
Good to be here, Frank. Thank you for having me.
So you say this book was born on February 28, 1976, Dean Smith's 45th birthday. What happened that day?
Well, I was 8 years old and a college junior. And if you believe that, I have some land to sell you in Oklahoma by the ocean. But I was a college junior. I was working for the student newspaper at Duke, the Chronicle. And Carolina had just crushed Duke, as they always did in those days. But Duke had a great player named Tate Armstrong, who actually played on Dean Smith's Olympic team that summer. Mm-hmm. And I was writing a story about Tate. And I wanted a quote from the great Coach Smith about Tate Armstrong, who'd scored 29 points in the game. And Dean was standing in a corner of the locker room. And I very timidly walked over and introduced myself to the great man, because even then he was an icon in the state. And I said, my name's John Feinstein. I work for the student newspaper at Duke. And he said, oh, I know who you are. I read the story you wrote a month ago saying that Bill Foster, the Duke coach, should follow our model here at Carolina to rebuild the Duke program. I thought it was very fair, for someone from Duke. And that became kind of a running joke between Dean and I for the next 35 years, to be honest. I would always say, can I just be fair? But that was when I first met him, and I was awed, of course, that he read something that I'd written. And was always fascinated by him because there was so much more to Dean Smith than being a great basketball coach. As you know, he was involved in desegregating restaurants in Chapel Hill in the 50s when he was still an assistant coach. Was always very outspoken on social issues. And really, if you remember what his players said about him a year ago when he died, you know how extraordinary he was. As you said, I got to know Jim Valvano and Mike Krzyzewski before they got here. When Mike was at Army, and I actually saw him play at Army, and when Jim was at Iona, I'd seen him play at Rutgers when I was a kid growing up in New York. And when they came down here, as you said, they were two young coaches, 33 and 34 respectively, and Mike's line describes it very well. He said, if Jim and I had landed from Mars instead of from New York, we couldn't have had less understanding of what we were up against in terms of who Dean Smith was. And his best story about that, I think, was his first year recruiting after he'd been here for a little while. He was recruiting a kid in California named Mark Akers. And he could tell, as coaches can, that the visit wasn't going well. He's not going to get the kid. And Mark Akers' mother hadn't said anything all night. And finally he turned to her. He said, Mrs. Akers, do you have any questions at all about Duke, about our campus, about our team? She said, no, I don't need to ask any questions, because the only thing that's important is that Mark goes someplace where he'll be close to God. And Mike said, well, if he comes to Duke, God will be 10 miles down the road in Chapel Hill coaching, so you might want to consider it. Kid went to Oral Roberts.
Well, that relationship and maybe that understanding would change. Look, one review of your book called it a love story. Mm-hmm. Would you call it that? Is that what this is?
It's funny. When I read that review in the Washington Post, which will be in Sunday's Washington Post, I guess it's online now, my first thought when I read that line was the guy got it. He understood the book. Frequently, authors don't think that about reviewers. But I talked to Mike Krzyzewski about it this morning because I did his radio show. Ironically, he was asking me questions. I had actually thought of trying to make a love story part of the subtitle, because even though there was tremendous antagonism between Krzyzewski and Dean early on, and there was a serious rivalry between Mike and Jim early on, eventually Mike and Jim became so close that Mike was actually in the room in the Duke Hospital when Jim died with his family, and was there every single night. And Pam Valvano said to me, when Mike would come to the hospital every night, my daughters and I would all leave the room, just leave the two of them together. And for that hour or so that Mike was there, Jim didn't have cancer anymore. He was a coach again, because he was with a peer and a friend and a father of three just like him. And Mike said they said things to one another that men don't say to one another. That's how close they got. And it changed. It took longer with Mike and Dean. But the irony is, when Mike became Dean, became the coach who was the target, who set the bar for everybody else, he came to understand why Dean did a lot of the things he did and what the pressures were that Dean faced.
So take us back to the time when he didn't understand, before this was a love story.
Well, I think you can start with the first time they coached against each other in 1980 in the old Big Four tournament down in Greensboro. And Carolina had a team that ended up in the national championship game. Duke was still pretty good that 1 year before they had to reload, but they had Gene Banks and Kenny Dennard. It's a two-point game. Ball goes out of bounds off a missed Duke shot off of Carolina, and it was going to be Duke's ball. But the clock went to zero. And Mike immediately ran up to the clock operator to argue. There was no tense, no replay. And while he's arguing, Dean came over, put out his hand, and said, "Nice game." And Mike turned around. I'll clean it up a little bit. But he said, "The damn game's not over yet, Dean." And Dean was kind of shocked. Roy Williams was standing right behind Dean as the third assistant to see what was going to happen. And he said he remembered thinking, "I don't like anybody talking to Coach Smith that way. But the guy's got some guts. 33-year-old coach just out of Army." Anyway, Krzyzewski lost the argument, turned around to shake hands, and Dean was always a grip-and-run guy on handshakes. And Mike held him there, wouldn't let him go, and said, "At least admit it was a hell of a game, Dean." And Dean said, "I'll remember that." Mike said, "Good, I hope you do." And that was the beginning of an unbeautiful friendship. And then 4 years later came the infamous double standard comment after a game in Cameron, when Krzyzewski insisted there was a double standard in the league, one for Dean, one for every other coach. And Dean was furious about that, again, because he felt that was demeaning to his players, that our players win games because we're good, not because there's a double standard. And ironically, nowadays, Krzyzewski feels the exact same way. We win games because we're good, not because we get calls and everybody else in the league thinks Duke gets all the calls.
Let's just pull back. What do you think about that? I mean, again, coaches of that stature. I won't talk about Dean or Coach K, but the fact is that a reality?
Well, it's a reality in this sense. They certainly get more leeway from officials when they're arguing because they're respected, because they know the officials. They've been around a long time. They will get more leash. I think there have been times, I saw it happen to Carolina, I've seen it happen to Duke, where there's almost a backlash where officials want to prove, "I'm not in Coach K's pocket. I'm not in Dean's pocket." And the kind of a classic moment in their relationship after Duke had gotten good and won the first two national championships, the two teams are playing in 93 in the Dean Dome, and both coaches are up on the refs early. And Lenny Wirtz, who was a veteran ref and knew how to handle things, called them both to the scorer's table and said, "Fellas, I know it's a big game. You're both tight, but give us some room. Let us work the game." And Mike, who has a sneaky sense of humor, said, "Lenny, there's 21,000 people here. They're all against me. You three are the only ones I can talk to." And Lenny Wirtz started to laugh. And Dean said, "Lenny, you can't let him do that. You can't let him. He's trying to get you on his side." And Mike turned to Dean and said something I won't repeat on radio and walked back to his coaches and said, "If I ever start to act like him, don't ask any questions, get a gun and shoot me." And in later years, there were times when Mike said things and I would call him and I would leave him a message and I'd say, "We're rounding up the guns," because he did become Dean.
Those were a lot of things they said in private that all of us couldn't overhear. There was one great moment, famous moment, when everybody heard what Mike said about when he got angry, and there was a large, a loud guttural uttered that the whole crowd heard.
Oh, well, there were many of
many
those, actually.
Well, when did things start to change? When did the relationship begin to fall?
I think it changed toward the end of Dean's career, when they became the two senior guys, the two older guys in the league, and everybody was shooting at both of them. By then, they both had two national titles, Mike in 91, 92, Dean in 82 and 93. And I remember I was doing a book on the ACC in 97, and their handshakes had always been what we call blow-bys, you know, not even a look in the eye. And they played a great game in Cameron. Duke won the game. And as they shook hands, I was standing right there. Dean said to Mike, "It was a great game, and I'm really glad my guys made your guys give everything they had to win the game." And Mike said, "I think this will make both teams better." And they tapped each other on the shoulder. And it was the first time you ever saw that kind of exchange between the two of them. And both teams did get better. Carolina didn't lose again until the Final Four. Duke ended up winning the ACC regular season title that year. And I think, especially after Dean retired, when they're not competing constantly in recruiting and on the court, the relationship became much warmer, to the scene at the end of the book that I describe, when Mike went to see Dean at his beach house. And Dean by then was dying of dementia and very sick. He was in a wheelchair. And Linnea Smith had said, "You know, you're welcome to come see him, but he may not even know you're in the room." And Mike and Mickey Krzyzewski went down to see him. And Mike was talking to Dean, because he's always been, being a military guy, mind over matter. If you try to make it happen, it'll happen. And he was talking about how proud he was that he'd won the Presidential Medal of Freedom, and nobody deserved it more. And Dean was staring into space. And finally, Mike, who said he was about to break down, went over and he took Dean's hand and formed it into a handshake. And he put his left hand on his shoulder. And he said, "Coach, I love you." And Dean, he said, looked up at him. And he saw recognition in his eyes. And Dean took his left hand, put it on Mike's right hand, and squeezed it. And Mike said he lost it completely because it meant so much that there was at least some recognition still there. And, you know, you think about Circle of Life, that first handshake to the last handshake. It's pretty extraordinary.
What does it mean for the programs to have three great coaches like that in the area, that kind of competition? I mean, they all sort of play up. That's what made this region maybe what it is.
Mike made an interesting comment that he thought they all made each other better.
Yeah.
Because they had to. I mean, especially, you know, Dean said to me one time that after Duke got good, that Mike made him make the extra phone call. In other words, in recruiting, it got harder because once upon a time, Carolina would have gotten Danny Ferry and Grant Hill and Bobby Hurley and Christian Laettner. Now, they still got very good players, but not all of them.
Yeah.
And it made all of them work harder, although Jim was different because Mike and Dean are coaching lifers. The minute they won their first national title, their first thought was, how do I win a second? When Jim won the national title in 83, when he was only 37, he felt like he had done coaching. His goal had been cut down the last net. He cut it down at 37. No coach under 40 has won the national title since then, by the way. And started looking for the next thing, whether he was going to be a TV star or a stand-up comedian, which he could have been. He was that funny. And he didn't pay as much attention to his coaching, and that's why ultimately things fell apart for him at NC State. Somewhat unfairly in many ways, but it did fall apart for him in large part because he wasn't paying enough attention. And tragically, the next thing for him was cancer, because when he knew he was going to die was when he worked with Krzyzewski and others to form the V Foundation that's now raised more than $150 million for cancer research.
Now that Mike Krzyzewski of those three is the only one left standing, you know, what does it mean for him? What does it mean for the program and basketball in the region? Has something gone out of this?
And again, it's not because he doesn't respect Roy Williams, who's obviously done a great job at Carolina. He's in the Hall of Fame, too. But he talked about this very honestly, that he misses them. He misses them personally, and he misses competing against them because he understands, you know, now he can kind of look back and have the perspective of history that he was part of something unique. There will never again be a trio of coaches like this coaching in the same place at the same time competing with one another. It won't happen again. And he understands that. And he's grateful that he had a chance to be a part of it. Now, in the 80s, when he was getting his head handed to him some of the time, he wasn't that grateful. Yeah. But now he is, and he gets misty-eyed talking about both of them. I asked him one time, the night that I decided to do this book, ironically enough, I said, if Jim were still here, what would he say to you about everything you've accomplished? And he said, he'd say, I told you so. Because Jim was one of the guys who told Mike that he didn't understand how good he was, not only as a coach, but as a public speaker and other things like that, and encouraged him to be more confident. And now you see what's happened.
It seems to have taken. So what do you say? I mean, the rivalry itself is still very much in play.
Yes.
Obviously, Carolina was supposed to beat Duke. That was hands down. Nobody
right.
thought Duke had a chance. I think they were unranked at the time they played last time.
I believe they were unranked. Yeah.
And, you know, sure enough, we had to give Will Michaels, Will call the darn timeout Michaels, a day off.
Right.
Just because, you know, he was miserable. And by the way, he produced this segment with you, who are from Duke.
I did graduate from Duke.
But what a pro he is.
Dean always said that I was a good Dukie. I mean, that was like the ultimate compliment he could
pay. I'm not sure what that means.
I'm not sure what it means either. And as I said, he used to always say, you were very fair for us. But it's funny. The last time I ever saw him was 6 years ago now. We were working together on his biography. He had finally agreed to let me write the book that I wanted to write about him as told by him, as opposed to others telling the story, which had always been the case in the past. And Lefty Drizel called him because he always checked up on him.
Coach at Maryland.
Years.
For
yeah,
many years,
and,
yeah,
and another intense rival. And Dean said, I'm sitting here with John Feinstein. We're working on this book. And Lefty, who also went to Duke, said, you're letting a Duke guy write your book? And Dean said, I don't think of him as a Duke guy. I think of him as a good guy. And I can't even tell you, Frank, how much that meant to me that he said that.
No, but the idea that you're either a Duke guy or a good guy is
yeah, you
is
can't be
pretty
both.
Clear.
Yeah,
no,
mutually exclusive. Clearly mutually exclusive. But I had so much respect for him. And again, going back to what he did in the 50s when he helped desegregate restaurants. And the line that I've always said sums him up is I was the first one to report that. Nobody had known it because he never talked about it. In 1981, I was doing a profile on him for the Washington Post. And I went to see his minister, Reverend Robert Seymour, and he was the one who told me the story because he was involved in that incident, whatever you want to call it, that night. And when I went back to Dean and said to him, you know, tell me more about it. Were you afraid you might get arrested? Were you nervous? He said, who told you about that? And I said, well, Reverend Seymour. And he said, well, I wish he hadn't told you that. And I said, Dean, why? You should be proud of doing something like that. And he looked at me and he said, you should never be proud of doing the right thing, John. You should just do the right thing. And he very much lived his life that way. He never wanted the spotlight. He never wanted the attention. When they won the national championship in 1993, the NCAA had changed the championship ceremony, so that the coach would be presented the trophy. And they said, we're going to present you the trophy. He said, no, you present it to the captains, not to me. They said, no, we present it to you. And if you watch the tape of that, they hand him the trophy. Dean literally says, I'm very proud of what my players have accomplished here tonight, and practically throws the microphone down and hands it to George Lynch. He was the trophy to George Lynch. He was on there less than 5 seconds. That's always the way he was. And that's why it meant so much to me that I got to spend the time with him that I did. Usually we talked more politics than basketball.
And the other coaches as well. John Feinstein, thank you so much. What a
pleasure.
Thanks
for having me, Frank.
John's new book is called Legends Club, Dean Smith, Mike Krzyzewski, Jim Valvano, and the Epic College Basketball Rivalry. John's going to be at Flyleaf Books in Chapel Hill tonight at 7, Regulator Bookstore in Durham tomorrow at 7. We've got all that at our website, stateofthings.org. It's a program produced by Laura Lee, Anita Rao, Will Michaels, who will probably be in on Monday. He is counting on a win this weekend. Charlie Shelton Ormond and Andrew Tai. Robin Copley is our technical director. Brent Wolf is WUNC's news director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stacio.